Omaha Public Radio presents another luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club on Noon Forum. On today's program, we'll hear a debate between the two Republican candidates for the United States House of Representatives from Nebraska's 2nd Congressional District, the office currently held by Democrat Brad Ashford, who is running unopposed. The candidates are Don Bacon of Papillion, a retired Brigadier General with the United States Air Force, serving at one point at Offutt Air Force Base, and currently Assistant Professor in the Bellevue University College of Business. And Attorney Chip Maxwell of Omaha, who formerly served on the Douglas County Board of Commissioners, and a former member of the Nebraska State Legislature. This program, co-sponsored by the League of Women Voters of Greater Omaha, was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday afternoon, April 21, 2016, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the candidates and do not necessarily represent those of the Omaha Press Club, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the program is our moderator, Gary Kerr, a member of the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee.
Chip Maxwell of Omaha has served in the Nebraska State Legislature and on the Douglas County Board of Commissioners. Don Bacon of Papillion has spent his career in the Air Force, retiring as a Brigadier General after serving at, among other places, Offutt Air Force Base. Each candidate will get a minute and 30 seconds to respond to each question, plus an additional 30 seconds of rebuttal time on each question. You know those fancy lights and noisemakers they have for the presidential debates? We don't have them. We can't afford them. But we do have a timer. Gail, raise your hand. So we're all set. Please, no applause, whistles, catcalls, etc. during the debate, but you can do that now. Don Bacon and Chip Maxwell, please take your places at the podium. The questions were prepared by a committee of Press Club and League members. The candidates have not seen the questions in advance. There are two-minute closing
statements.
I'm
peeking right now,
though. Don Bacon, you get the first crack at the first question. If one of you wins the general election in November, what problems do you see here in the Omaha 2nd Congressional District that need to be addressed? What are your priorities?
Well, first of all, thank you very much. I'll get to that in just a second. Thanks for moderating today. Thanks to Chip for being here. I want to thank the League for hosting. I also want to thank you for the survey questions. I thought they were very good, very open. I appreciate being able to fill them out. There are a lot of issues we have to address. They're not just to the local area, but addressed to our national. The role of the bureaucracy, how it's undermining our small business community. I hear about it every day when I talk to the business leaders here in this local district. Our deficit is a problem for everybody, to include this district. I want to be focused on that. Further, Offutt Air Force Base is our largest employer. No one can defend and advocate for Offutt Air Force Base like I can, as a previous commander and two-time person being assigned there. They have over 10,200 folks on the base, and it creates 4,000 more jobs in addition to that. And the Air Force wants to reduce one out of four bases in its inventory. We need someone like me that can advocate for this base and make sure it stays relevant to our community. Thank you.
Chip Maxwell.
Thank you, Gary. Thank you to the League and to the Press Club for sponsoring this debate. I want to briefly thank my campaign coordinator, Tommy Owens, is here today. My mother, Mary Maxwell, I'm almost afraid to mention she's here. By acclamation, the room will probably decide, get rid of these two clowns and give the microphone to Mary Maxwell. No, she's just here as a spectator today. My daughter, Beverly, is also here today. She is not skipping school. She has no school today. And she and my children are the main reason I'm running. It's what gets me off the couch to run. We have a variety of issues. I imagine we'll delve into them today. But the number one thing for me is this debt that we're running up. It is not just bad fiscal policy. It is immoral. We want this much government, but we're only willing to pay for this much of it. We just borrow. We keep borrowing to cover the rest of it. We'll leave the tab for those coming after us. I say when I'm out on the stump, even if you don't have children, do you have a conscience? This is not the American way, what we're doing. We have got to stop what's going on. Just grow government. Keep growing government and keep borrowing to pay for it. We cannot keep doing that anymore. That is the main thing that gets me off the couch to run for office. It affects the 2nd District. It affects every district across the country. and we have got to do something about it before we pass a point of no return. We've got countries in Europe like Greece and Cyprus. They're going over the edge financially. We're not there yet, but we are on the same path unless we make some changes.
Don Bankin, you have an additional 30 seconds.
Well, thank you. You know, our government, total government, spends 42 cents on every dollar earned in this country, but we tax 38 cents on every dollar, so we have about a 10% delta. It's wrong, and it is immoral. We need people with moral courage who can stand up and find areas to reduce. I believe we need to reduce domestic spending, because we've already cut military spending by 18%. We also need to be willing to talk about how we're going to reform entitlements so we can save it for our kids and grandkids.
Chip Maxwell, 30 seconds. If you want to add to what you...
I have nothing to add on that question.
Let's go on to the next question. Yep. Chip Maxwell, this is for you. First, although more than 90% of climate scientists say global warming is a fact of life, there is a group of people who don't believe it. Do you believe there is global warming, and why or why not? And if you do, to what extent do you think man is responsible, and should action be taken to reduce fossil fuel emissions to combat global warming?
No, not until the case is better proven. And I know I've seen that there are polls and statistics out there. I ran into the same kind of debate years ago in stem cell research. I was on the side that said, we love stem cell research, just don't destroy human embryos to do it. And there was an argument at that time, all of scientific research says you've got to destroy embryos to succeed at this. That was not true. It's not an issue anymore because our side was right. The success was with the non-embryonic sources. So when I hear these arguments about global warming, there's a huge split in the scientific community right now over this. Is it happening, number one? And if it is it just the natural rhythm of the planet, or is man-made activity causing it? And then finally, no, I'm not going to reduce America's capacity for economic growth until it's absolutely proven, number one, that it's happening, and number two, that activity by man is affecting it.
Don Bankin, you think it's happening?
It is disconcerting to see different data on both sides. And there is clearly a sense from myself, and I think many feel this way, that much of this data is being politicized, perhaps on both sides. Now, we do have a weather wing off at Air Force Base. It's the primary weather center of excellence for the entire Air Force as well as the Army. And I've had a chance to talk to these folks who study this all the time. And they show that there is some incremental growth in the weather temperatures, very, very slight going back the last three decades. Then the debate becomes this, how much is this man-made and how much is this just normal cycles in weather? And I think that's still up for grabs. But what we do know is this, and I think two things. We need to continue to make incremental improvements to our environment. And America has done a good job with that. Our Great Lakes, our waterways are as clean as they've been for 50 years, and we keep getting better, minus Flint. Also, we have more trees in 49 out of 50 states today than we did 100 years ago. So we should continue to incrementally improve. But we cannot do cap and trade that Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, who is supported by Brad Ashford, that wants to go after the industry in this country and use this as a huge cash cow for taxes. It would be wrong to use this to help grow big government. That's what they want. So they see this as a tax cow and a new tax source, and we have to fight that. And Bernie Sanders said the other day that, yes, this will create huge dislocation with our workforce. We can't let that happen.
Jim Maxwell, you got anything to add?
I agree with everything Don just said about that. I'd also add, if we ever do enter into any kind of agreement, it's got to create a level playing field. It's going to have to apply to India and China and other actors in the same way it does to us. The problem with some of these agreements that are proposed is basically the impact is unilateral on us.
Don Bankin, you have 30 seconds if you want to add.
We all want to be good stewards of our environment, so we want to continue to incrementally improving, and we have been, and I'm proud of that. America has led the way in many regards. Today in Beijing, you have to wear a mask most often. In Moscow, most of their lakes and waterways are polluted, so we need to keep continuing to do better, but we cannot allow the left, which Brad Ashford's aligned with, to use this as a new tax basis.
Don Bankin, question for you. First, what specific programs would you cut to reduce spending, to reduce the deficit? Mr. Bankin, you say you will fight pork. What do you consider to be pork in the budget?
Well, this Bankin will fight pork in Washington, D.C. You can take that to the bank. First of all, I do believe in protecting our military spending overall. We need better modernization, and our training has been degraded under this president. But there are things in the Defense Department that we can reduce. The staffs are they're too big. We have more general officers today than we did in 19, or three and four stars anyway, than we did in 1966. We're in Vietnam, and twice the size. So I believe in reducing the bureaucracy, and it's not just for DOD, but for all of Washington. All the bureaucracies are oversized. EPA, OSHA, you can go down the line. They've grown the last 10 years. Also, we got to reform the end-of-year spending. We've incentivize all our federal agencies to spend every cent on September 29th and 30th, even if they don't need to. Millions and millions and millions of dollars are thrown away. I'm also a Federalist. A lot of the things that Washington, D.C. should be doing should be done at Lincoln or at our city governments or left with our families. So we need to do a nose-to-tail review of what Washington's doing, and like most of our education, K through 12, should be done at the local level and at the state level, as just one example. So I think it's got to be a nose-to-tail review, and most of our spending reductions should be in the domestic area and reforming entitlements.
Jim Maxwell, what about the port?
This is one of the many areas where Don and I agree. You know, if you're conservative, the Constitution draws a circle of authority within which the federal government is supposed to be contained. Well, the federal government's broken out of that circle in many ways. In addition to what Don's mentioned, another example would be I do not believe the federal government should be providing social services. It's not allowed in the Constitution. It doesn't work, and we can't afford it. Now, people get nervous when you say that. Well, wait a minute. What about the struggling? So, survival of the fittest? We just leave people on their own if they're having problems? Absolutely not. In the most prosperous society the world has ever known, based on 4,000 years of Judeo-Christian teachings, we are our brothers and our sisters' keepers. We do have an obligation to help each other out, just not through the federal government. State government, local government. I have found from serving in government that the non-government agencies, religious and secular, are better than government at providing social services. So I mention that because when people hear limited government, oh, that's code for survival of the fittest. Absolutely not. But Don is right. We agree that the federal government is trying to do too much. We've developed this mindset where if there's a problem, just grow the federal government to handle it. That's why the government's growing out of control. That's why our spending's growing out of control, and we can't keep up. We keep borrowing to try to keep up with it. That's what I mean when I say we've got to make changes, or we're going to go over that cliff just like some other countries have.
Don Bacon, 30 seconds.
We have to realize that 40% of our spending does come from entitlements. So we can focus on the domestic spending, and we could chip away and make some progress. But we have to be willing to look the voters in the eye with moral courage and say, it used to be three people paying into Social Security for every one taken out. Now it's 2-1. We're blessed that we're living longer. That's a good thing. But we're going to have to be willing to revise that retirement age for those who are younger and also maybe link the cost of living increases with inflation. And by doing that, we can improve our financial health significantly.
Chip Maxwell?
Just back to the Constitution, and people say the Constitution, he's just some kind of a policy wonk or a philosophical nerd. It's not just for philosophical or ideological reasons. It's for practical, pragmatic reasons. Again, the Constitution draws a circle of authority for the federal government. We need to push the federal government back inside that circle, or at least as close to it as we can get, if we're ever going to get our fiscal house in order.
New question. You both tout conservative credentials. Five different conservative groups have been identified in the House, ranging from the religious right to the business-oriented conservative. House Speaker Paul Ryan has struggled to bring these diverse groups together. What are the specific conservative values that would drive your decision-making in Congress, Chip Maxwell?
There's a group on Capitol Hill called the Freedom Caucus. It's 40 House members. Jim Jordan from Ohio is the head of that group. Steve King from Iowa is a member of that group. Dave Bratt, the guy in Virginia who knocked off Eric Cantor in 2014, he's in that group. When I look at the constellation of Washington, D.C. and the various groups, as you mentioned, Gary, that's where I lock in. That's where my natural constituency would be. I want to work with those folks and try to build that, instead of being a feisty minority faction, build that into the majority position on Capitol Hill. Some of you might remember the 1994 contract with America, when Newt Gingrich, Dick Armey and company conducted a national campaign. They flipped the town. First time in 40 years there was a Republican majority in the House and the Senate. I think Newt might be the first person I'd look up and say, Newt, how do we replicate that? Share your playbook. How can we build a new majority of not just people with R's after their names, but we need to vet them and screen them and make sure they're truly conservative? Because if we don't get enough like-minded people on Capitol Hill, then we're not going to be able to do the things that Don and I are talking about. And again, with that cliff, we're going to go over that cliff fiscally unless we can get enough of the like-minded people. So the Freedom Caucus is where I would look to plug in and try to build out from there.
Don Bacon, conservative values?
Well, I've been blessed to command five different units in the Air Force, and I've learned the most important thing you do, you start off with a positive vision. People need to know where we're going. We need to have a noble vision. And so we need this in the House. And I think Paul Ryan, Speaker Ryan, is starting to work on this bold vision, as he calls it. But I believe a bold vision needs to talk about defending our liberty, defending our security, defending our prosperity. And it should then go to the next level down. It's about reducing the size of bureaucracy and the regulations that are choking the life of our small business community, our small banks, our farmers. We need to have a focus on fiscal restraint so we can balance our budget. We need to have a theme on simplifying our tax code. We have 73,000 pages of tax law. It's ridiculous. We could do better than that. And we also need to have a theme about national security. That's the foremost responsibility of our federal government. And under this president, we have failed. We need to have a policy that treats our friends like friends and knows who our adversaries are. And we need to keep our military strong so that we can have peace through strength.
Chip Maxwell, 30 seconds.
Conservative values, I don't know how to boil it down. Maybe it's this. I want a government that works for us instead of for the political class in Washington that keeps busting the budget, running up the debt, and quite frankly fostering values that are undermining the country. I want a government that is going to stop saying, we'll just grow the government to solve every problem. If I could boil it down in 30 seconds, those are conservative values.
Don Bacon?
Well, I've been a conservative since I was 13 years old when Ronald Reagan ran for president in 1976. I watched the entire convention gavel to gavel as a 13-year-old, and I cried when he lost. I am a principal conservative. I've been reading National Review and Human Events since I was a young guy, and I look forward to carrying that same spirit into Washington. But I'm going to reach out to folks that you don't always agree with necessarily, and you got to build these coalitions. In the end, I'm going to be loyal to the Constitution, to this district, and to the Nebraska voters.
Somewhat of a related question here, and Don Bacon, this goes to you first. This year's presidential campaign has uncovered a great unhappiness with politics and government as usual in Washington. What would you do in your first 6 months to change the status quo?
Well, first of all, I see it every day on the campaign trail, and it's why I'm running. I was a one star in the Air Force, eligible for a second star still, and decided, you know, it's time to get out and speak up. You can't do it while you're wearing the uniform. So I share in that anger, and that's why I'm here at running today, to make a difference. Now, what am I going to do to shake up Washington in the first 6 months? Well, I will be the most senior military retired member in the House. That gives me something a little different credibility than the average freshman coming in. I assume, though I don't know, that I'll be a member of the House Armed Services Committee. And I think I'll have a good voice where I can speak up for making sure our men and women in uniform have the right equipment and the right training. And that's been undermined the last 7 years. And I can speak up for our base. But I think I can have an immediate impact in the security of our country. I also know what it's going to take to defeat ISIS, and I'm not hearing it coming from this president. We have to have a holistic policy, not just targeting them in Iraq and Syria. You have to go after their financing. You have to go after the recruiting on the internet and the websites. I don't hear enough of this holistic policy, and as a congressman, I'm going to make sure I'm holding the feet to the fire, the administration, that they're developing a strategy that will allow us to defeat these folks who are murdering people of all faiths and murdering each other. It's wrong. So we got to stand up to it, and we can win.
Chip Maxwell, changing the status quo. You have a minute 30.
Would you read the question again, Gary?
Sure. This year's presidential campaign has uncovered a great unhappiness with politics and government as usual in Washington. What would you do in your first 6 months to change the status quo?
Okay, I hear that a little differently, I guess, and I understand why on the right and the left, with Trump and with Sanders, they're getting more traction than perhaps a lot of us thought they would get, because the number one issue out there is frustration of voters, Democrats, Republicans, doesn't matter what party stripe you are, independents, nonpartisans. What they say is, all of you say the same thing when you run for office, and we keep voting for you, and nothing changes. we see nothing changing. I think the only thing you can do in that first 6 months, whatever your bold plan is for debt reform or getting a balanced budget amendment passed, whatever you lock onto, you better get it done and you better produce. You better do something. That's the only way you're going to mollify the public out there. People have had it. They've had it for voting for politicians who all have the same talking points. But they don't produce anything. Nothing changes. So it's really incumbent on whoever goes out there to find enough like-minded people to say, we better produce something tangible and concrete here in the first 6 months, because the meter is running and the people are fed up.
Don Bacon, you have 30 seconds.
Well, I'm very grateful for the reception I've received in this district. I'm a first-time candidate, never run for office before, and standing up here today is exciting as can be, as you can imagine. So I feel very well-received as a first-time candidate, a non-career politician. And so I sense that same angst out there. I see it firsthand. Again, I think I bring something unique to this race that's being well-received. A military career background, non-career politician, but with a conservative vision, and it's I'm getting great traction in this district, and I'm grateful.
Jim Maxwell, 30 seconds.
Again, you better get something done. Get a balanced budget amendment passed and out to the states, or at least freeze federal spending or accomplish a 5% or a 10% across-the-board cut, something tangible. The public was told last fall, well, we're going to borrow another $1.5 trillion to get through a budget crisis, but we'll fix the budget crisis in 2017. Well, that's when we would be taking office. So, again, we better produce. We better have something concrete that we can show the people, something more than rhetoric.
Mr. Maxwell, you have said that the Republican Party is secretly supporting Mr. Bacon. What proof do you have of this?
Well, I got a call from a reporter at Politico a couple of weeks ago and said, hey, have you seen this email that's going around Washington, D.C.? What email? What are you talking about? So she sends it to me, and that probably wasn't very wise to be talking to a reporter and looking at it live and reading, because I got a little worked up. It was a congressman from Ohio who I understand is a friend of Don's. In fact, I believe they're both veterans. I have no beef with a friend helping a friend, and the band of brothers tie between veterans, I have no quarrel with that at all. This gentleman was using his position as vice chairman of the National Republican Congressional Committee as leverage, as a catalyst to funnel more donations to the Bacon campaign. That, I thought, was stepping across the line. I'd been told by the NRCC that it would be neutral in the race. So I got a little worked up about that. I knew going into this there would be a Washington-approved candidate and a local candidate. I knew going into this I might get outspent 3-1, 4-1, 5-1, whatever. I didn't care. I'm going forward anyway and running no matter what. So I got a little worked up when that was kind of thrown at me and presented to me, but it's in the rearview mirror. We're going forward. We're inside of 3 weeks to the primary, and so we'll let the voters decide which approach is the approach they support.
Mr. Bacon, is the Republican Party secretly supporting you?
Absolutely no. There's individuals who have been stepping up forward and wanting to help. Steve Stivers is a congressman from Ohio, a colonel in the Army. He has served in Baghdad. He thinks I am the best chance to win back this seat from Brad Ashford. He wants to ensure we have a Republican majority in the House, a conservative majority in the House. He thinks I'm the viable candidate to do it, so he told his friends the same. I also get support from Trey Gowdy, who feels the same way. Also members from the Freedom Caucus that Chip is also appreciates. But what's more important is the voters in this district, and I know that. And we're getting great support from this district. Three local mayors in the district have endorsed my campaign, both county sheriffs, Senator Fisher, Governor Kay Orr is the chairwoman for our campaign. I love her. She's a great mentor. We have county commissioners, county treasurers. Some of these folks have won 90% of the vote from their constituents. But I think it's also reflective of the support we're getting from all our citizens. But yes, the most important endorsement will be on May 10th from all of you.
Chip Maxwell, you got 30 seconds.
More than a year ago when I showed up at the annual Republican Party dinner, I had my Chip Maxwell for Congress button on. All the buzz that night was, haven't you heard about Don Bacon? The word's been given. Don Bacon has been anointed. At wherever these decisions are made, I'm not privy to these high councils. All the money's going to that candidate. That candidate has been designated as the candidate for this district. Apparently, that's why no other local candidates got in. I'm running no matter what.
Don Bacon?
Well, there has been no anointment. I have worked 15 hours a day for a year, meeting people, seeking people's support. I think the first break I had was when Governor Kay Orr decided to take a risk on a Don Bacon who's never run before. And this started growing a little bit at a time. two mayors from the local area jumped on board, and we've just grown our support one person at a time. I'm proud of it. I don't take it for granted as a first-time candidate to have the level of support we have had. I'm humbled by it.
New question. Don Bacon, you first. Will you support your party's presidential nominee no matter who that may be? And please explain your rationale.
Well, this has been a volatile question every single day on the trail. And unfortunately, I will tell you that the campaign itself, it's been harsh. I haven't not enjoyed the rhetoric. I've had to hold my nose. I don't like it, but it's a little bit on both sides. Both campaigns have had it. But we've had more than our share on the Republican side. But in the end, and yes, I will support our nominee. And the reason is, I believe Hillary Clinton, who Brad Ashford has endorsed, will be bad for our country. It'll be four more years of Barack Obama, bigger Washington, D.C., more bureaucracy. We will not fix the 73,000-page tax law. She's going to want to raise taxes so that instead of 38 cents on every dollar we're taxing, she's going to want it to be 40, 41, 42. She's going to just keep pushing that out there. We have to ensure we do not further the socialization, the growth of Washington, D.C., and that's what's going to happen with Hillary Clinton. So in the end, I'm going to endorse and support our candidate and our nominee.
Chip Maxwell, are you going to support your party's presidential nominee?
Yes. Don Bacon's lead endorser, Governor Orr, whom he just mentioned before, wrote an article in the column in the Omaha World Herald saying, if Donald Trump is the nominee, I will not vote for him. I jumped all over that and said that's poison. We cannot be breaking into factions that will deliver the White House to the Democratic nominee. It's also bad for those of us who are down-ballot candidates. If you drive people away from voting for president, they might not vote at all. For a lot of people, that's what draws them out to vote, the presidential race. And we, as Republicans, we need everybody on deck. We need all hands on deck in this election cycle. Things are set up very well for Republican candidates. The electorate is feisty. It's angry. It doesn't like business as usual. I think it suits us well. Let's not screw it up by breaking into rival factions. We had another prominent Nebraska voice say, well, let's get a third-party candidate going. Boycotts third-party. No. No, no. I don't mind saying that my preference going into this was not Donald Trump, but if he is the nominee, I will support him. He says he will appoint justices who will follow the Constitution. He says he no longer supports nationalized health care. He's for a system based on health savings accounts and so forth. So I feel like at least I'll take my chances with a Donald Trump. As a conservative, I'm not going to get anything that I want if the Democrat wins.
Don Bacon, you have 30 seconds.
I'll just re-stress. In the end, I will support our nominee. But I think it's more important from my own perspective. I can't control what goes on at the presidential level. I mean, one of my favorite people to say is General Grant. He said he always worried about what he was going to do, not what the other guys are going to do. And it's enough to worry about what yourself going to do, right? So my goal is to make sure that our campaign is run on issues positively, focused on what we can control with the folks as part of our team. So I'm going to put my emphasis on that. I want to run an honorable, issue-based campaign.
Chip Maxwell, 30 seconds.
I am a populist conservative. I am not an elitist conservative. That's why I'm not supported by the Washington political class and its local allies. I'm encouraged because the two candidates on the Republican side who've gained the most traction and broke away from the track also are the two most despised by that political class. So I think it's a good environment. I hope we just don't screw it up by breaking into factions. All Republicans ought to be supporting all Republican candidates in the general election ballot.
New question, and Chip Maxwell, this goes to you first. It appears the House will not pass a budget this session and instead use the appropriations process to fund the government. The House had a duty to prepare a budget by April 15th. Do you agree or not we should run our government this way?
I disagree. I've got a book out there saying what the House should be doing is work up a budget and present it to the president. And somehow, I fault the House, I fault Congress for not having enough of a spinal cord. The Constitution gives the power of the purse to the House. The president's not supposed to be driving. The Congress is supposed to be driving fiscal policy in this country. Now I realize Republicans are terrified of that word, shutdown. Shutdown, oh my goodness, shutdown. What the Congress ought to do is present a budget to the president, say, here it is. And we're not shutting anything down. We are funding government. Now, it's your prerogative. If you want to veto it and risk a shutdown, so be it. But we're not shutting down anything. We're funding all the priorities of government as we see them. You are a president. You are not a dictator. Just because there's something in here that doesn't like that you don't like, you shouldn't be shutting down the government over it. The House has got to turn the tables on the president and go on offense instead of continually playing defense.
Don Bacon, what about the House and a budget?
I believe that we need individual appropriation bills. By doing that, each bill gets focused on and it can be reduced and targeted, and you can get some fiscal responsibility put back into the House and the Senate and the whole process. Unfortunately, in recent years, Harry Reid has prevented that happening. His goal was to maintain the high levels of spending, so he wanted to do a huge omnibus bill where it was an all-or-nothing vote. And that it was done to keep spending high. The Republicans need to work to do individual spending bills because that's how you target spending and get a little fat off the bone. I'm a proponent, too, for what Nebraska does. Nebraska has a balanced budget requirement and also has a requirement that individual spending bills have to be individually voted on, not group bills. We need to have this in Washington, D.C. as well. This will be the best way that we can get our arms around the out-of-control spending.
Jim Maxwell, you have 30 seconds.
Gary, the only way I tweak my last answer is Don and I actually both had columns in the newspaper back in the fall because a budget deal was done, and in some circles there was great rejoicing. Democrats and Republicans got together. They agreed on something. Yeah, they agreed to do nothing except borrow another $1.5 trillion to fill that gap, and we'll get around to fixing the fiscal crisis in 2017. We do have to have budgets, but not business-as-usual budgets. There's got to be some true fiscal reform in it.
Don Bacon?
You know, the last omnibus bill was voted, our two Republican senators voted against it, and our two House Republicans voted against it, but Brad Ashford voted for it. And it did it raise spending by $140 billion with a promise to find ways to cut five, six, 7 years out. It's not good for America. We got to do better than that. And I think the voters are owed honesty and courage in how to do this. They just passed the buck down five, six, 7 years later.
You both favor repealing Obamacare, and you both want the states to have a greater say in providing health care. If you leave it to the states, don't you risk a patchwork of laws and rules and regulations across the country? Please be specific on your version of health care, how it would work, and to what extent it would be different from what we had before Obamacare came on the scene. Don Bacon.
Well, that's a great question. I think it's one of the top issues I hear day in and day out, particularly from small business owners. Obamacare has throttled their growth. In fact, they're stagnant on purpose. Obamacare is a big part of that. Now, if you like $1,000 wrenches out of the federal government, do you want them working on your health care? No. I don't want a bureaucrat running your health care in Washington, D.C. I want to hold people accountable here in Nebraska for our health care. So moving the regulatory authority to Washington, D.C., I believe is wrong. The regulatory authority needs to be at the state level. Now, I believe we need to have market reforms where there's competition driving down costs. Even Governor Ricketts talked about the time he had to get, I think it was a MRI, and he was given the ability to shop it. He was able to find one at half the price from the first one he called by just shopping around. We need to have competition that drives down those rates. We also need tort reform. When we're doing defensive legal medicine, it's not right. Now, there's some things that we can keep at the state level. For example, ensure that we have pre-existing coverage. We can do that at the state level. We do not need Washington, D.C. Doing that. So I am absolutely supportive of repealing Obamacare and replacing it at the state level where we can hold Governor Ricketts and our local officials accountable and put their feet to the fire.
Chip Maxwell for a minute 30.
Gary, what was that turn of phrase, something about a patchwork?
You both favor repealing Obamacare. You both want the states to have a greater say in providing health care. If you leave it to the states, don't you risk a patchwork of laws and rules and regulations across the country?
Patchwork. Well, see, one person's patchwork of laws and regulations is another person's wonderful dynamic model of federalism. You know, we have 50 states in this country. Let them innovate. I've had conversations like this with people on the left who say, somebody somewhere in this country might have a better or a worse health care plan than somebody else. And I said, well, yes, that doesn't scare me off. That's how you get progress. And I think Don is saying something similar. We need to go back to introducing competition and innovation into our system. The more government leans in and takes control of it, the more expensive it gets and the more hostile it is to users and practitioners. We've got doctors now who are saying, forget it, I'm getting out of here and just setting up my own fee-for-service system. Okay, so that doesn't scare me off that, you know, somebody might call it a patchwork. I would say push it back down to the state level and turn the states loose to innovate and experiment. I like what I've heard Ben Carson say about a system based on health savings accounts. You got a tax-free pile of money that you use for your routine health care, to introduce free market principles back into the equation by the consumer and by the provider. That's the best way to drive down costs and premiums, encourage competition, and promote better access to better health care. You still pay a premium in case something catastrophic comes along. But no, I'm definitely for repealing and replacing Obamacare with a system that is more federal in nature, as in pushed down to the state and local level.
Don Bacon, 30 seconds.
Insurance companies are losing money left and right right now. They're bailing out of Obamacare because it is broke. Also, the deductibles have skyrocketed for most individuals, and the premiums have gone up. This has not worked. It's failed, and we're going to have to return back with some changes down at the state level.
Chip Maxwell for 30.
The only thing I'd add, Gary, is that I do know from serving in office at the state and local level, I have much more confidence in state government and local government. It's easier for us to keep track on it, to keep an eye on it. Washington, D.C., it's too big. It's too many moving parts. It's too hard to monitor. That is another reason to push things down to the state and local level.
All right, new question, and Chip Maxwell, you have first crack at this. Immigration. It's believed there are 11 to 12 million illegal immigrants in the United States, but according to the Pew Research Center, illegal border crossings are now at the lowest level in 40 years. So how much of an increase in border security do we really need? And for those illegal immigrants already here, should we attempt to round them up and send them back or provide a path to citizenship?
All in 90 seconds. All right. I want to note that my son Tomas joined us in progress here. It's an interesting issue because for me it's not just theoretical. My children, my seven children, are Latino immigrants. And I'm going to embarrass my son now. I'll pay for this later. But he began his life scavenging for food and struggling to survive in a third world orphanage. He's 26 now. He and his 25-year-old brother have graduated from American universities. They have good jobs at good businesses in this community. They are tax-paying citizens living the American dream. And maybe you can tell there's a little bit of a father's pride mixed in here. Okay, but politically, no one is going to get away with calling me anti-immigrant. All right? But for reasons of national security, public safety, and economic stability, we do need to know who is coming here before they come here. We cannot accommodate illegal immigration. We can't reward it by allowing employers to hire illegal immigrants. Arizona, I think, is a model for what we could do. Arizona's not having big police state roundups. Arizona hasn't built a wall. Arizona has made E-Verify apply throughout the workplace. Arizona's made it impossible to work there unless you're legal, impossible to hire someone who is not here legally. And it's working because people are streaming back to Sonora, Mexico, the state across the border from Arizona, which has complained to Arizona. Too many of our people are streaming back home. Let's start there.
Don Bacon.
Well, first of all, we'll oppose the president's executive orders that I feel have violated the checks and balances of our Constitution system. In fact, as many people know it, our congressman here voted for in defense of sanctuary cities, and I think that was wrong. Now, you mentioned that our immigration, illegal immigration flow has diminished. That's because our economy has been subpar. Small businesses haven't been hiring. Once our economy starts improving again and more hiring, you're going to see that flow pick up again. Now, I have a three-point plan when it comes to immigration. We need to have employer enforcement. That's the root cause. As a military guy, when you have a problem, you say, okay, what is the root cause of this problem? How do we solve it? Well, we have folks are coming here, and they're trying to take care of their families. They want to send money back home. For a while, we were getting 300,000 illegals a year. That's about the size of the U.S. Air Force. But they were mainly coming here to work and send money back home. We have to hold employers accountable for knowingly hiring folks who are illegal. And once we do that, then we need to do more security on the border. I don't believe it has to be a wall from coast to coast. It could be virtual walls, other kinds of sensors. But they need to go in tandem. If you don't do the employer enforcement, though, you can build a wall a mile high, mile deep, and folks are going to get here. Thirdly, I do believe that people that came here illegally should not get amnesty for citizenship. We have people waiting 10 years to come here legally from Mexico. It's not fair to those who are trying to do it right. So those are my core positions on illegal immigration.
Chip Maxwell, you have 30.
I guess just to summarize then, so if you're here illegally now, you got to go back and get in the right line. We're going to make it impossible for you to work here or be hired here. You will have to go back and get in the right line. I'm not against immigration as long as it's legal. And I like Don's proposals on border security, because I know you said the numbers may be down, but, you know, it only takes one terrorist to get through to cause a real problem. So we've got to be more vigilant about border security as well.
Don Bacon?
Now, I just heard a report that there are thousands and thousands of Cubans through Mexico and in Central America making their way to get to our border. With the policy changes we've had with Cuba, the floodgates are open and they're coming through. I can't remember which country. Maybe it's Guatemala. Don't remember which one. There's going to be different waves of this problem, so we have to get to the root cause, and it's got to be a comprehensive plan with the border and holding employers accountable. But there has to be a commitment that we're not going to give people that citizenship if they came here illegally. That's going to be red lines for us. Thank you.
Don Bacon, new question. You're up first on this. Congress, which is Republican-controlled, has refused the Obama administration's request for additional funding for the Veterans Administration. You both have expressed support for veterans. So do you support the additional funding? And if so, how are you going to come up with it?
Well, the Veterans Administration needs to be reformed, I think, before we turn on more money. The money needs to be spent more wisely. First of all, the VA needs accountability. Right now, you can't replace very easily at all, and folks who are not measuring up or doing their jobs. So we've got to get accountability put back in. The gross violations we saw out west, very few people were held accountable. Or for that Denver VA that was so, like, four times the projected cost, who was held responsible for that? I have not heard. So we got to have accountability. We need transparency where they're spending money. And also that needs to be upgraded. In our own VA, they're mailing, here in the local area, they're telling me how they mail their records to Florida. We have to get the electronic system, bring them into the new age here with technology. So I do believe in accountability, transparency, but also we need to give the veterans more freedom to pick where they get their care at, so they do not have to just go to the hospital. They go to their local doctor that they like. And I think that in the end, that will be cheaper. So I'm all right for improving the funding of VA, but it has to come with reforms so that's better spent.
Chip Maxwell.
I like that. Make sure it's operating properly before we would put more money into it. The only other thing I'll mention is I got a call from a veteran one time who read my book and said, oh, limited government, oh, shrink government and so forth, so the heck with the veterans. And I actually added a paragraph because I said, I'm glad you called me. Even for a constitutional conservative, when you draw that circle of government authority, Article 1, Section 8, there are four or five articles that deal with maintaining a military. That includes caring for the warriors who have served us. We have a VA system right now that does not seem to understand or care about veterans. It's unconscionable. This problem has been with us since the beginning. After independence was won, there was almost a coup by veterans who weren't getting paid by Congress. They weren't getting paid their pensions by Congress. George Washington averted it. The meeting was, they were almost ready to roll, and he showed up, before he was going to read his statement, he took out a pair of glasses and put it on and said, "Forgive me, gentlemen, I've grown old in your service." Well, apparently that melted the room, and that took the wind out of the sails, and of course it didn't happen. But it's a problem that has plagued us all along. I don't understand why, because it's a core function of government. We've got to take care of our veterans.
Don Bacon, 30 seconds.
And one of the good things I hear about our local VA, most folks are happy with the care they're receiving. So we need to give praise where praise is due. Our local VA is working hard, and the feedback seems to bear that out. But the reforms that we need are broader than our local VA. It needs to be, institutional-wide within the VA. I would say that we need to make sure that we live up to our commitments to the veterans. Folks who served 20, 30 years or who lost a limb, whether it's Afghanistan or Iraq, you can't promise them when they serve that you're going to get this care and then start squelching on those commitments. So I will stand by our veterans.
Chip Maxwell.
Nothing to add.
Okay. New question. Although the Obama administration claims the current military campaign against ISIS in the Middle East is making slow but sure progress, both of you have indicated you believe more needs to be done. What does more mean for you?
My turn?
Yeah.
I've noticed now, I've seen news stories where Ash Carter, the defense secretary of the Obama administration, is now talking about boots on the ground. What I want from this administration, will you please give us a clear, coherent strategy? I mean, we've gone from this is a JV, then it was, well, we've got them contained right before attacks played out on European and American soil, ISIS-sponsored or ISIS-connected. Will you please give us a coherent strategy, and don't be afraid to use the word victory? Okay. One point where Don and I disagree is he is on record as saying no ground troops. I don't know for sure. I want to hear from the experts involved in the situation right now. I think it's a mistake to just issue a declaration, no ground troops. That weakens our hand and strengthens our enemy's hand. If the experts involved in the situation say, this isn't a video game, we're not going to win it with drone and missile strikes, we have to have boots on the ground. If we're serious about defeating ISIS, then the next thing we do is go to the people, say, okay, here's what it's going to take, and here's what it's going to cost. Are you for this? One of the important lessons we learned from Vietnam is we don't go to war. We don't put Americans in harm's way unless there's relentless majority will supporting the objective, however we define it. Second thing is, if the consensus is yes, we're doing this, then we turn the military loose to win it. We do not manage it as a politically correct affair from Washington, D.C.
Don Bacon, no ground troops?
Yes. I'll back up, though. Before the Paris attacks, we were doing 7 strikes a day against ISIS in an area that was about the size of Great Britain. They were pinpricks. They were just to show the American people they were doing something, but it was very little. After Paris, it has been stepped up, and it needed to be. Now, we have the best air in the world, best air superiority or air power. We have the best Navy power. We have great intelligence, great command and control systems. We should also be great leaders. Our president has failed to lead and put a coalition together that will put ground forces in Iraq and Syria. Now, I'm opposed to ground forces going there because if you put them in there, we will win. We will take we'll take casualties. Will be blood and treasure spent. But then it's hard to get our ground troops out. This needs to be the local forces on the ground. They have more skin in the game, and we need to hold their feet to the fire. ISIS is a bigger threat to them than they are to us. But it takes leadership. Our president needs to get the Jordanians, the Saudis, the Emiratis, the Qataris, the Kuwaitis on board. And it's going to take leadership to do that. It should be, in the end, Iraqis and the local forces on the ground with some U.S. special forces, so there will be some ground combat element with our air power. But you cannot win this war with that alone. You have to go after their finances, which we just started to do again after Paris. Why did we wait so long? And they're recruiting 1,000 fighters a month through the internet. You can strike all you want, but you have to go after their recruitment to win this war.
Chip Maxwell, 30 seconds.
We were at an event last night, and Don said something with which I agree. He talked about what a mistake it was for the Obama administration to pull troops out of the Middle East and leave a vacuum and let ISIS come in and fill it. Okay, so again, the experts may tell us, hey, if you're serious about defeating ISIS, you got to put boots on the ground, and you may have to leave troops there for 15, 20, 30 years until the good people in the region can build a society. We still have troops in Germany and Japan, okay? They're there as allies now. But again, tell us what it takes. We'll have a conversation with the people and decide if we're going to do this or not.
Don Bacon.
In Iraq, up to 2011, we had 11,000 ground forces there, but they were not in combat role. They were in garrison doing training. And essentially, they were holding Prime Minister Maliki's feet to the fire, and including Sunnis and Kurds and their government. As soon as we pulled them out, he kicked out the Sunnis and the Kurds, and it left a vacuum. Again, if we have ground forces in Iraq and Syria for the next 10 or 15 years, it will not be because I voted yes. I will oppose that. I do not want our young men and women doing combat roles over there for that long.
Last question before we go to final statement. For Don Bacon first, would you vote to increase the minimum wage? If not, why not?
I do not think this is a role for Washington, D.C. to do. This should be a state-level decision. Fact is, if you do a minimum wage, whatever it may be, how does it compare for New York wages versus wages here in Omaha? To me, there's totally two different qualities of life and standards of living, right? But I don't think this is something for Washington, D.C. to do. I think, frankly, I'd rather leave it with the private sector. But I will oppose any minimum wage increase out of Washington, D.C. and from Congress. This should be a state-level decision. I'm a Federalist. I believe we should leave that decision there.
Chip Maxwell?
I agree the federal government should be involved. And no, I'm not for government at any level mandating minimum wages. One of the causes I've been affiliated with over the years is the Omaha Alliance for the Private Sector, fighting for small businesses at City Hall and at the state capitol against government overregulation, knocking heads with unions on contracts, especially pension contracts. And this was one issue. What happens is people may be well-intentioned. You raise that minimum wage, small businesses are usually working on small margins. They're not charities. They're businesses. And if you're going to make labor more costly to them, you know what tends to happen is the perhaps low-skilled adult who really needs the job versus the perky teenager who's just looking for some spending money but may have better skills and be more productive, the low-skilled adult who really needs a job is the one who's going to lose out in that equation. You can actually hurt the people that you're trying to help. So instead of rely on government, you know, to raise people's standard of living, allow people to get entry-level jobs so they can get into the workforce somewhere, get a rung on the ladder and start developing work skills, and then they can move up the ladder. That is what's going to serve people the best in the long run, not government mandates on minimum wages.
Don Bacon, anything to add?
I'll just say again, we're going to leave this to Lincoln and our local communities, not Washington, D.C., if I have my way as your next congressman.
All right. Chip?
Can you believe this? A candidate with not filibustering? But no, I don't have anything to add on that one either.
All right. It is time for final statements. These are 2 minutes long. And Don Bacon, you are first.
Well, again, it's an honor to be here. I thank the League for hosting this today and a great moderator. I thank Chip for joining. I also want to introduce my wife, Angie. We've been married 32 years. I moved her 17 times with the Air Force. And mother of four, we got three grandkids. My oldest son is here. He has two kids and his wife, a local girl here. He works at Gordman's, so and I'm very proud to have a lot of my supporters here as well. I am running not for the job title. I've had good job titles. I don't care about a job title, frankly. I'm not running to get a new paying job or a pay raise. I was offered good jobs when I retired out of the Air Force as a general. This is about continued service to our country that I love. I said my oath to the Constitution back in 1985. I love our country, and I sense it's in danger right now. We're walking backwards. We're undermining the most prosperous country in the world with policies out of Washington. Recklessness with our debt and the bureaucracy, frankly. So I want to run and make a difference. I want to keep our country strong. My focus is on rolling back a bureaucracy that's out of control, streamlining our tax code. I want to ensure that our Constitution is being respected. I want to be a fiscal conservative, watching your pennies and dollars as best I can and leave it with you. And I want to make sure America maintains peace through strength with our military, our national security. I believe I am what the voters are looking for. I've never run for office before. I've commanded 8,000 people successfully, 7,000 people successfully. I was an installation commander of 55,000. I did missile defense for Israel, defending Tel Aviv, Haifa, and Jerusalem in defense against our potential Iranian attacks. I think I bring something to the table that other candidates in this race do not have. On top of that, I'm the one person that knows every in and out of Offutt Air Force Base, our area's largest employer, and I will be a great advocate. Thank you.
Chip Maxwell.
I have run for office before. It's a huge advantage in this environment because the number one frustration of people is, like I said, those politicians, they go into the bubble of government headquarters and they become creatures of the bubble. They forget about the people who sent them in there. I have shown people as a county commissioner, as a state senator, I've got scar tissue on me from battling Democrats and sometimes Republicans on some of these fiscal issues we've been talking about today. I don't change. I'm the same guy inside that bubble that I am out here talking to other people. And that's a huge advantage because people are incredibly frustrated. And I believe my advantage is that I am a homegrown, proven conservative. I'm the tested and trusted conservative that you need fighting for you in that political arena. Last thing I want to say is that the goal here is to beat Brad Ashford. It's nothing personal. When my dad died a few years ago, the news became public. One of the first people I heard from was Brad. And we're not big pals. But he said, sorry to hear about your dad. What a great guy. Okay, that matters to me. There are some things in life more important than politics. But I want someone more conservative representing us in Congress, and we can't afford to roll the dice. We can't take a chance. We need somebody who has proven, who has the stripes to show for it. It's too important. We can't waste a single district in this country. We can't waste a single state. Like I said, we've got to build a new majority on Capitol Hill. You do that by sending people back to Washington, someone like myself who's got a 15-year legacy in this community as a candidate, as an office holder, as an advocate for pro-life and pro-business causes on the firing line of talk radio. I have proven that I will fight for conservative principles. I'm Chip Maxwell. I'm running for Congress, and I would appreciate your support. Thank you.
Hey, how about a big round of applause for our candidate?
Hey, you did a good job, too.
You've been listening to a luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club on Noon Forum. On today's program, we have heard a debate between the two Republican candidates for the United States House of Representatives from Nebraska's 2nd Congressional District, the office currently held by Democrat Brad Ashford, who is running unopposed. The candidates are Don Bacon of Papillion, a retired Brigadier General with the United States Air Force, serving at one point at Offutt Air Force Base, and currently Assistant Professor in the Bellevue University College of Business, and Attorney Chip Maxwell of Omaha, who formerly served on the Douglas County Board of Commissioners and a former member of the Nebraska State Legislature. This program, co-sponsored by the League of Women Voters of Greater Omaha, was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday afternoon, April 21, 2016, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee and the League of Women Voters of Greater Omaha for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. The Omaha Press Club presents these noontime educational forums each month. The next program will be this Thursday, May 12th at 12 noon. At that time, we'll hear a panel discussion on the topic, Human Trafficking in Omaha. The panelists will be Sister Rosalie Burke, a Notre Dame nun, coordinator of the Order's Social Justice Committee, and chairman of the Coalition on Sex Trafficking, which was started by the Leadership Conference for Women Religious, and Stephen O'Mara, currently serving as an Assistant Attorney General, the Nebraska Human Trafficking Task Force Coordinator, and the Child Protection Training Coordinator. If you'd like to attend this or other future programs in the series, call the Omaha Press Club at 402-345-8008. These events are open to both members and non-members of the Omaha Press Club. The Omaha Press Club is located on the 22nd floor of the First National Center, 16th and Dodge in downtown Omaha. Tomorrow, May 10th, is the Nebraska state primary election. We strongly urge you to go to the polls and vote. As we have said before, the only vote that is wasted is the one not cast. Complete Noon Forum listings, as well as an archive of over 600 previous broadcasts, are available on our website, kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.